set my timer so I have some gauge. Because I could go for, 2 minutes. I could go for 20. Oh, you're going to flag me. Oh, perfect. Okay. It's funny. Oh, my name is Cody and I am an alcoholic. It's funny, on the way here, it came with a couple friends, and one of my friends said, he said, "I never like showing up early to YPG because I might get asked to speak." So I know how it feels. It's definitely nerve-wracking, but it's also exhilarating. It's good to be up here and to see everybody. And let's see. My sobriety date is November 1st, 2011, so I'm coming up on 2 years. I have a sponsor, and I'm looking to sponsor others. I go to some different clubs, and I guess if I had a home group, it would be Yana. But I guess I'll follow the normal formula of talking about how I got started and what changed and where I am now. I think the first time I remember ever tasting beer was I was about 6 years old. And I remember I was hanging out with my dad, who is a heavy drinker and a heavy drug user, and I'd been stung by a bumblebee, and he took me in the car, and it wasn't that bad, but I was maybe whining a little bit, but we were driving off, and he had a can of Busch in the cup holder. He's a good drinker and driver, a great example. He just got out of prison a couple weeks ago, actually, and I pray for him often, but I'll touch on that later. I tasted the Busch beer, and I have the memories, it didn't taste good at all. And I think maybe a month later, we were in the car, it was my dad and me and my brother, and there was a glass of orange juice, and it was a little more than orange juice. There was some vodka in it as well, so I got to taste the liquor, too. My family's always been big drinkers, big wine drinkers, and so I was raised around it. And starting in around adolescence, they would let me drink a little red wine, at the table. And I remember, first getting a little buzz, getting a little glow. But for me, I didn't really start off with alcohol. When I was 16, I started smoking pot. That was my first addiction. I was just, getting stoned and I guess as I've done my inventory and I look back on my life, I think I started smoking pot because I was searching for a way to fit in, a way to be cool. And also for me it was like I wanted to kind of discover, was there more to myself? And I got into reading, some spiritual stuff about people that use psychedelic drugs and marijuana to expand their consciousness. So, I mean, that was part of it, but anyway, I started getting stoned and taking psychedelics and stuff and got in that crowd. And after a couple, 2 years or something, that nice high feeling from marijuana started to change, and I started to feel paralyzed in my own body, and paranoid, I'd be in rooms and I didn't know what to say. It was a terrible feeling, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that. So the solution was alcohol, because I never felt paranoia when I'm drunk. I wanted to it's quite the opposite. It's I felt that warm glow, and in high school I started drinking, and I felt more comfortable talking to women, and also getting closer to women physically. That was relatively easier, especially when they were drunk too. And, that's an advantage, but I never really. In high school and even early college, I never had any really meaningful relationships with the opposite sex, except, one-night stands and that kind of thing. Although I have friends and, you know, and that kind of thing, but it was normally just whatever. And also, like, this is totally random, but I want to make sure in my short 15 minutes that I do focus on my recovery, because one thing I've noticed, for whatever reason, in AA, a lot of times speakers spend a big chunk on their using time, and it seems like recovery is like a last thought, like, oh, I got sober and did the steps and everything's great, you know. So I want to make sure I spend some time on that. Anyway, so the drinking progressed, and you know, I went through stages of depression, and I started popping pills to kind of help with anxiety and just to feel good and stuff. And one time I was hammered and I blacked out, and I had been sitting on a balcony, and I don't remember this, but the people that were there at the time told me what happened. And I fell off the balcony and I hit my head on the concrete and woke up in the hospital. And when I remember waking up in the hospital, and like I saw the nurse, and I'm like, am I in jail? He's like, no, you're in the hospital. It's like, oh, good. Well, it's better than jail. But he started to feed me food, you know, because I guess I'd been out for quite some time. And so I was eating, and I was like, hey, man, I can't taste or smell this at all. He's like, well, you've had a severe concussion and fracture, and your, you know, neurons or whatever have gotten disconnected. It's like, oh, that's cool. I've lost my sense of taste and smell. So that was a big wake-up call. That was about 6 years ago. But when I came out of the hospital, I was like, well, I'm never going to do pills again. And then a week later, I was drinking, you know. But it was pills that were the problem. So I limited my usage to alcohol, and that continued to go strong, you know, going to the bar every night. And I was late to work and stuff, and I finally did meet a woman, and we kind of got together, and we ultimately got married, and we moved to San Francisco. And from the time I was with her, the drinking was always a problem, you know, because I would stay out late and she would want to spend time with me. She wasn't somebody that liked to close down the bar. I always hit the 3 a.m. mark and like, let's keep going, you know. There's no ceiling. I just always have had an urge to break through to some higher reality, you know. And but you know, alcohol is not a good method to break through to a higher reality. It's a good way to dig deep into a hole and to fester in that hole and to slowly rot. It's a good way to do that. It was a constant battle, and it was like a mother-son thing. She was like trying to regulate my drinking, and I'd be like, okay, you know, I won't drink this much, and, you know, constant back and forth. Anyway, we moved to San Francisco, and she was pursuing her ballet career, and I was trying to get a job, and I couldn't get a job. It was just like so many doors were being shut on me. But I kept drinking. My drinking was steadfast and persistent. I followed through with that, and I got you know, to be friends with the local bar scene, and we would play ping pong and you know, pool, and I would, you know, I started to, you know, well, how should I say? Anyway, things were getting progressively worse with my wife, because I didn't have a job. We were struggling financially. You know, San Francisco is a very expensive city. It's insanely expensive. So we were just barely getting by. One night, you know, we had a bad fight, and I was like, I'm gonna go drink. You know, and I was drinking, and I ended up, this girl was there, and she, blah blah blah. I ended up cheating on my wife, and immediately after, I felt terribly guilty. Like, I'd never done that to her, so I was like, I'm gonna swallow this thing, you know. I'm not gonna tell her. I'm gonna fix it. And I think I was like, you know, I'll stop drinking, maybe, but I don't think I have to stop drinking. I just, you know, don't cheat on her, you know. But anyway, after about a month, I was so consumed by guilt that I had to tell her, and that's when, you know, things started to crumble. We went into counseling, and I said, okay, I'll only drink when you say I can drink. So I won't even barter. I'll just ask, and if you say no, I won't do it, you know. So that lasted for like a month. And then after a month, I'm like, I'm going to manage my drinking again. And she's like, okay, you know. And I can't believe she even put up with that. But so a month of that, I was back to, you know, closing down the bar. And then she left. Boom. You know. And that's when I was like, I started to see a counselor on my own. And I said, you know, maybe I have a drinking problem. Maybe I should go to AA. I said that to him. I was like, maybe I should go to AA. And he looks at me right in the eyes. Most beautiful thing that's ever been said to me. And he says, how about tomorrow? You know, I said, okay. And I didn't go the next day, but I went like 4 days later. So I did follow through. And when I remember when I walked into my first AA meeting, I felt like, this is it, man. I mean, a lot of people, they drag their tail feathers in AA or they're court mandated. But for me, it was clear. It was clear, you know. I was like, this is it, you know. And I got a sponsor the first night and started, you know, doing some stuff. And how much time do I have? Because, I don't. Oh, cool. Plenty of time. Okay. Anyway, so I was up in San Francisco hanging with AA people, and I got sober, and I was just, you know, putting my, you know, I was like, I'm going to do this thing. And at the same time as well, I was kind of hanging out with a couple other people that in San Francisco that were like spiritually oriented people. One of them in particular owned like this little shop. I would call it like a New Age shop. You know, sell crystals and things like that, and tarot readings. And I started to hang out with him and talk about more mystical aspects of spirituality, so to speak. So I was doing that, and I was going to AA, and I was also seeing an individual counselor who, again, was not, a normal counselor. He was doing, like, vision quests with me from the Native American tradition. And so I was, like, I was flying high, you know. And and ultimately, after about 2 months of being sober, going to AA, and hanging out with these other guys that were spiritually oriented, I did have a strong spiritual awakening experience. 5 minutes, okay. And what happened was I was driving in a car. I was on a long road trip, for the first 4 hours of the trip, I rolled up all the windows and it was really hot, and so I more or less created a sweat box out of the car. And I was sweating profusely to purify my body. And again, this is like Native American stuff, like I'm an Indian, you know, shaman or something. And and then the second half of the trip, after about 4 hours of that, I just, you know, I rolled down the windows and I just got very, very relaxed, very serene, deeply serene. And I was just enjoying the ride. And then at one point, I started to feel this really pleasurable sensation in my back, and so I sat up straight, and suddenly, like, I was struck like a lightning bolt, and I've never felt so connected to God and to, you know, everyone I knew, everyone that I'd studied in spiritual traditions, Jesus, the Buddha, etc. And it was like a burning bush moment, you know what I mean? Like, I was lit up like a Christmas tree, and it was crazy. And I was driving, too. So it was like, I kept driving, and even though it's like I'm tripping balls, stone sober. And I called my mystic friend. I'm like, man, like all this energy is running through me, and I'm seeing visions. And he's like, just chill out, man. He's like, come back to San Francisco, because I was out of San Francisco. He's like, we'll talk about that. He's like, just chill out. So I did, and I simmered down, and I kind of made it through the trip. But what I've learned since then is that there really is there's no singular spiritual awakening. I still have much to learn, and from that time of first getting sober, I relapsed one time, and what had happened was I moved back to Florida from San Francisco, and I stopped going to AA, and I was like, I don't need it, you know. I got my own mystical thing, man. you know, I don't need them. And but a situation arose in my life where I was very angry, and it was my brother. You know, I talk about my brother in meetings a lot, and he doesn't mind because he can talk about me all he wants. I don't care. Anyway, but my brother is still drinking. I was like, look, just go to AA. You just go to a couple meetings, get the gist of it, and then bail out. You know. But he wouldn't do it. So I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to drink with you to show you how stupid it is. And it was a miserable failure. So I drank with him for like 2-3 months. And at the end, you know, I was like, all right, this is ridiculous. I need to stop. I'm going to quit, you know, on my own. And I couldn't stop. And I was like, I really am an alcoholic, and I need to get back involved with AA, you know. So that's exactly what I did. So that's about 2 years ago now. And the whole point is, like, what I realize is, no matter how mystical or spiritual an experience I might have personally or in solitude or whatever, it's completely meaningless and worthless if I can't share it in some way. If I can't be of service to other people in the most simple ways, helping out at a meeting or giving people rides or just going to Starbucks to get some coffee, it's totally worthless. And so I had a big lesson in spiritual pride. No, big, big lesson. So how much time do I have? I'm sorry, I keep checking. 1 minute, okay, so I'll wrap it up. So, you know, I don't know, I have a lot of gratitude, and if I had to convey anything to newcomers or to anybody that's in the program, it's that, you know, spiritual awakening is meant to be. It's only meaningful and useful if it can be shared with other people. And I'm amazed at these people I'm starting to meet in the fellowship, you know, that are showing up, that everybody's got a unique story, everybody's got unique gifts to offer. It's really just a beautiful community, and I don't know, I'm totally devoted now, and my only focus now is, you know, how can I be of service, you know, and my what's available to me, you know, and so it's a trip, man. You know, buy the ticket, take the trip, don't look back, you know. That's so. Thanks for listening.